I'm Joe Wood, and I believe.
June 24, 1947, Northwest Washington State. Civilian pilot Kenneth Arnold is flying his small aircraft near Washington's Mount Rainier. It's a clear evening, and Arnold sees something in the sky he assumes is a new military aircraft, this being at the start of the Cold War. However, as he gets closer, he realizes it's not of this world. He sees 9 blue glowing objects flying at an estimated 1,700 miles per hour in a V formation. Arnold reports the sighting, describing the object's motion similar to a saucer if you skip it across water. The media pick up on the phrase, and now the common term flying saucer is born. The military confirms that no exercises took place in the area, before later dismissing Arnold's claims as an hallucination. Just weeks later, the most famous UFO encounter ever occurs. Roswell.
Welcome to Alien Nation, the ongoing series about extraterrestrials and UFOs, which asks the question, are we alone? I'll be talking to celebrities and everyday people who also believe and have their own incredible stories to share. We'll talk about well-documented cases, we'll examine the theories and the counter-theories, but mostly we'll just share our own personal experiences together. So get in touch with your own stories. I'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. My guest today is a pioneering electronic music composer, performer, and producer. Since his mainstream debut in 1976 with Oxygen, he has sold over 80 million records worldwide. He has also performed in front of a record-setting crowd, the largest being 3.5 million people in Moscow in 1997. And he's very keen on outer space. I was lucky enough to speak with Jean-Michel Jarre at his apartment in Paris. Welcome, Jean-Michel. So lovely to be here in Paris. Thank you very much for letting me talk to you. I'd like to ask you first, how did you develop your interest in space?
It's very interesting because just before we started this interview, you were just mentioning that maybe we're not talking about space enough. I think it's probably no more the case, but where you're right is actually when I started in electronic music and being involved in technology,
yeah.
We had this kind of positive vision of the future. We had a vision for the future, expectations from the future. It was just a time in the late 60s where after 2001, Space Odyssey, and we were all dreaming about the idea that after year 2000, cars would fly, and we had this kind of great vision about the future and about space. And it's like if after year 2000, our expectations regarding space just shrank.
Yes.
And we were just asking ourselves, are we going to survive on our planet because of environmental issues and because of problem of pollution and so on and so forth? And it's like regarding the future, the end of the 20th century was like the beginning of an era where everything would be possible, and the beginning of the 21st century would be like the end of something. And I think that recently, since the past 6-7 years, suddenly there is an excitement about space again, about the vision for the future with people such as Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos,
yeah.
About the fact that, again, we are thinking about going to Mars and also leaving this period, the last 25 years, where actually the superheroes symbolizing the future are actually very old. Superman, Batman, they're all born in the 50s. They are quite old, and they are like a kind of vintage image of the future, and we put just smartphones in their hands. But then recently, I think that there is this kind of renaissance, if I can say, about the expectation, what would expect from space, from the future. So I was with Stephen Hawking last year because I got the Stephen Hawking Medal last year, just before he passed away. And he was saying two things. He was saying that, you know, before the 21st century, if we go on like this, we probably have to leave Earth because we'll be too many. And we'll have to colonize space and go into space and maybe going and maybe meeting other species, maybe. And it was it's very interesting that suddenly you have even very serious scientists like him talking about these things, where I thought that for a few decades we just stopped being even interested and involved with space. And,
but I thought he didn't believe in other civilizations out there, Stephen Hawking.
You know, when you are getting older, I think you believe more and more in something less and less precise.
Yeah.
And I think that it was not that definite on one direction or not. What he said, he said that to have this exactly the same conditions as the human beings have on Earth is probably not very easy to conceive, but eliminating any kind of form of life, and I think that would be very arrogant to think so, to think that when you think that the universe is so vast that we are the only
life. We cannot life. It's possibly just be the only beings.
No, exactly. I totally agree.
Without a doubt. And, I mean, I actually have seen a UFO, so I know that something's out there. And it fascinates me. I just would love to know as much as I can. You were friends with Arthur C. Clarke, weren't you?
Yes, we were quite close. I was, like lots of people, a massive fan of 2001 Space Odyssey. That is, it's a movie that influenced me a lot, like lots of musicians of my generation. But actually, for me, it was not only a great space opera, it was more than that. It was also the idea that science and the spiritual world could meet with this monolith and all this. And then I was a big fan. And I was in London a few years later when he published the sequel, 2010.
Yeah.
And I remember in Piccadilly, I ran in the bookstore and I read the book at once. And then my surprise was to see my name in the acknowledgements that Arthur C. Clarke wrote the sequel, listening to my music.
That's fantastic.
So we started a correspondence, and I remember that I sent him a letter because it was before the internet, before emails. It was in the 80s, and he sent me his schedule until 2001. So his letter was actually like a sci-fi message per se. And then we met and we became quite good friends. I spent some time in Sri Lanka. You know, what I like in Arthur C. Clarke and this kind of brilliant minds, when we are talking about science fiction, it's absolutely fantastic to discuss with a man having one foot in science and one foot in the fiction and meeting both.
Yeah.
Lots of scientists are very rationalist and they refuse any kind of dreams or fantasy or things that science has not proved so far.
Yes.
And Arthur was really in the middle of all that. He was actually, it's very interesting because he was consultant for NASA and consultant also for the Russians, and from Sri Lanka where he was living. And he really taught me how to watch space.
Oh, he did?
Not the stars, but space, which is not the same.
Oh, really?
And we spent hours on the roof of his house, his mansion, and he was explaining space to me, not the stars, not like an astronomer, but more like a sci-fi writer at the same time. So we talked about UFOs, we talked about aliens, and he was quite convinced that, of course, there is. It would be very arrogant, again, to think that we are the only ones in the universe.
Well, they say they walk among us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, when you see a trace of water, of rocks, minerals, I mean, just evolving. I mean, it means that life, of course, is able to exist. And when you know, not being too scientific about it, but I mean, universe is made of hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen, and we are made of that. As creatures, we are all part of. We are not an exception in the chemical organization of the universe. So why not thinking that we are the only one, because we have nothing special. If you think about it, it's just a specific combination of elements existing in the universe. So why not say no, it doesn't exist? You know, it's you still have lots of people in the world thinking that the Earth is flat.
Which I can't understand how they can come to that conclusion.
Yeah, it's very...
When you sit on a plane and you can actually see the curve of the Earth,
yeah,
can you imagine? I can't. Falling off the edge, where would you go to?
Yeah, I mean, why not? People can. You know, I'm saying that people are saying crazy things, but what I would like to tell you and to share with you and with the people listening at your podcast and your great show is actually the fact that it's not because science has not discovered certain phenomena, that these phenomena don't exist. And the idea that actually, you know, there is nothing crazy about accepting what has not been proved by science yet. You know,
yes.
we have so many examples in the past, and specifically with religions, for instance, that the first guy talking about the Earth being round and not flat has been considered as a sorcerer, and I think he's been burnt or something like this. So you know,
it's amazing how things change. And you know, I always find that with religion. When they talk about the star going over Bethlehem, I think, come on, that has got to be a UFO that moved across Bethlehem when Jesus was born. I know. But it could be true. The possibilities are endless.
Everything. And you, yeah. Of course, when you see also these signs in South America, crop circles.
Oh, crop circles. Yes, we have crop circles in England as well.
That's right. Exactly.
A lot of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And apparently people have seen it, a flash, and then next second the crop circle has appeared.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that fascinating. There was also something about they actually sent a message out and a crop circle appeared, and it was that of an alien face.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, who could do that? I don't know. It's got to be done, well, it's done somehow that we don't know how to do that. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, so people have explanations for everything, and you know that with UFOs, even if you have a part you can explain, I love the idea.
Yeah.
I love the idea. The only thing is, that, again, why, if we're accepting the idea that you have aliens who actually came very close to us, why we never had so far a real contact, like in Close Encounters in the...
I've thought about that a lot, and I thought that maybe it's all to do with religion, because I reckon the governments know, and I think if the people knew, it would put religion out the water, and religion is a form of control.
Yeah, sure, but actually it's not... I think it's not enough, because I think that... and partly in days on the internet now, where everybody knows everything all the time. So it's going to be more and more difficult to hide such a phenomenon.
Yes.
So anyway, I love all these different solutions anyway, like in Matrix, for instance. So all this kind of imaginary or hidden possibilities. I love that. It's part of our core business as artists.
Yes.
Also, you know, it also comes the mystery of inspiration. Why when you are in a studio... And for nights, days, you are finding a song, and then suddenly, bang, it comes like this.
Yeah.
And lots of us are saying it, we're always saying it comes like this. But it's, in a sense, it's true. There is a kind of mystery of what inspiration is for musicians or for writers or for painters. That you can, suddenly, you have the sparkle, you have something, and then it's coming quite instantly.
Yeah.
And that is also part of this kind of mystery.
That's what Tesla said. He said that he would get this inspiration and he would be able to just draw and be inspired by an invisible force, really. And,
And he said it's also what Leonardo da Vinci said.
Yeah.
Also that he really designed the planes of the future, the vehicles of the future. And he was saying that actually... those ideas came to him in a rather mysterious way.
Yeah, I can quite believe that, actually. So when you are creating, do you suddenly get some inspiration that you don't know where it's come from? Start playing something?
Yeah. I'm more and more convinced that inspiration happens when I lose control.
Oh, really?
I think that, and I think it's not only me, I think this is the basics. I'm quite more and more convinced that this is the basics of inspiration. When suddenly you let your imagination open.
Yeah.
So you have lots of possibilities to do that. I mean, some people may use drugs or just being in a certain time in the day or at night where you are in a situation where you don't depend for a moment from your environment.
Yeah.
Phone calls or mails or whatever these days, just suddenly you are just open. And this is the very precious moment you should miss. And I think it's really coming from that. And yeah. The fact of when actually, it's like if you suddenly you are not responsible for what you do entirely. This is the reason why I think that inspiration is linked to, in a sense, the spiritual world. Yeah. I always considered my music, but not lots of people said, it's a music coming linked with space and the future and all that. I would say that it's for me, it's more like a suspension. It's linked with space, but not necessarily only outer space, but the space immediately around us. You know, this kind of between the ground level and clouds, just there. And I like this idea. And this is the reason why also I've always been interested by doing big outdoor shows and outside, outdoor, not necessarily in arenas or in...
You played to something like 3.5 million people, didn't you?
In Russia, yes.
In Russia,
frankly, I don't know. I mean, the first concert I've done in Paris, it was really an experimentation. The first time that you had really...
Place de la Concorde.
Yeah. And you had the first time that somebody was using giant projections on buildings and doing a big show involving lots of videos and visuals. And 1 million people came along. It was like a shock for me. And I remember that one guy with a very long beard came to me and said, "Man, I never saw that in my life." And I didn't really recognize him. It was Mick Jagger. And
I said, "Yes, we were in Paris at the time, I think."
Yeah. And later on, we talked about that. And he said, "Wow!" And they said, "I didn't recognize it."
Yeah, it was
shooting
beard.
A movie was like he looked like Fidel Castro. I mean, it's
what was that movie he was shooting? Was it the Australian? He played some Australian, Ned Kelly.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that's right. And this is the reason why it was so funny. And then it's very strange because I've been asked by different countries and all that. I remember that when I went to China, Mick really wanted to come because that was the only country that the Stones at that time didn't visit. And I've been the first Western musician to play China just after Mao's time. And also, it's again, with a kind of outdoor situation. And Houston also was. I'm writing an autobiography at the moment, but I could write a book only on Houston because this was such an amazing encounter with NASA, with the fact that NASA, for the first time in its history, decided to be involved in a concert or cultural event or whatever. And the idea was to have an astronaut playing live in space.
That was the guy that died.
I mean, one guy was Ron McNair, and he was a sax player. So I wrote a piece with a saxophone where it was like a 2001 kind of environment where NASA got the camera to get a live link because the idea was we would play live together. Him in space and us on stage.
That would have been amazing, wouldn't it?
And then he said, "Okay, we look at the takeoff and we play each other in 3 weeks." And that was Challenger. And then
it
exploded. So everybody was in tears and they wanted to forget the project. And then some friends, astronauts, told me, "No, you have to do this also as a tribute for the astronauts." And then it became actually still the biggest, in terms of crowd, the biggest concert in America with 1.3 million people. It was like amazing. It's an amazing moment and very,
incredible.
Very moving moment.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And so there had this link of with space very strangely because later on when you were talking about this concert in Moscow with, around 3.5 million people, we had Mir station live.
Yeah.
During the concert, and that was really moving because it was in these days, if you remember, when they had a problem, the Russians, and we didn't know if they would be able to come back. So you had a kind of tension because Mia was a bit stuck in space at one moment.
Oh my God!
And so it was really, and then they took some of my music. I remember this was Equinox, I think. They took some of my music, and when we had the transmission, my music was played in space. It was so crazy. And the first image was from the window of the shuttle, the Earth.
my goodness.
And it's very interesting that all the visuals, the most extraordinary visuals we have and images and footage we have from space by human beings is our planet. I mean, the most extraordinary vision we have from the man on the moon is not necessarily the man on the moon. It's the man watching Earth.
Yeah.
And this is quite extraordinary.
The beautiful blue planet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Still blue from space.
That's amazing. I wonder if it's blue from way out. It's got to be, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's the...
Because we get the red planet, we still see that is red. So our planet must look blue from way out there. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary.
Yeah. Did you see they have just taken a picture of the black hole?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I saw that, yes.
Yeah.
It was very... it's quite mind-blowing when you know that this picture is representing an entity, an object, like 6 billion times bigger than the sun.
Isn't that just... You can't get it now, can you?
No, yeah.
It's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
I found the other thing that was very fascinating was I saw a documentary about dark matter, and they said that they know dark matter is here. We can't see it, we can't touch it, nothing, but we know dark matter surrounds us because the sun is there and all the planets come out and they should all go round the sun at different speeds, but they all go round the same. They're all held together by dark matter. I think that's extraordinary. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, they say that also dark matter is like a negative of the matter. So it's the reverse. It's very, all that is very still very mysterious.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
And this guy said, for all we know, that we could be living with beings that are of dark matter.
Yeah.
Might be sitting
and
there.
I love this idea of when we're talking about space, we're also talking about time, because time and space, as we know, are linked. And I love this theory of Stephen Hawking. That he said, okay, you know, the universe is in expansion, and one day it's going to stop because as we speak, the universe is still growing since the Big Bang. It's growing and growing, growing at a fantastic speed, and then at one moment it's going to slow down and then shrink again.
Oh,
and then
really?
It means that the time would be that would maybe in a two billion years we could go back and maybe living again where we live. What I mean,
well,
this conversation.
Doing right now.
And he
maybe
was very serious about it.
Maybe that's where déjà vu comes from.
Yes.
Maybe we've
this
done
is
it.
It's a super
before.
Déjà vu, this one, with a big, big, strong memory.
Oh,
and then everybody said, wow, it's great. And they all checked his equations and that. And they were all very impressive. It's great. A year later, he came back. He said, no, I was missing 1x. It's not going to happen like this.
Oh, it's
so
not.
It's not true. Unfortunately, it was true for a while. For 1 year, we thought it could be great. But what's quite amazing is this idea of time and the limitless of space, which is also another thing, which is quite amazing.
Yes.
It's like if we are trying to explain to a mosquito the solar system. We are exactly in that situation.
Gosh. Do you wish NASA would send out more music to space like they did with the Voyager in 1977?
Yes, I've been involved in different projects, and I know that people have sent some of my music already. I think it's very important, apart from being eventually satisfying for your own ego, apart from that, it's quite it's quite interesting to send like a bottle in the sea.
Yes.
It's the same thing. I mean, there is something very Romanesque and very very symbolic of... isolation, in a sense. I mean, sending a message to universe, I think it's a very, very nice gesture.
It'd be wonderful to know that some beings have found it and are listening to it. Oh, what's this? Da, 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 da.
Yeah, if they have ears.
Oh, yeah, if they have ears.
That's the problem.
Oh, yeah, that's that's funny. I was going to ask you, what do you think aliens would make of your music?
Super remix.
Super remix. they might take it and do something extraordinary with it.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, what's quite frustrating is we can only think about other lives in space, in the universe, based on our own criteria.
Yes.
But this is the trap at the same time. We have no idea about what we don't know, but actually these creatures actually are maybe not able to hear the range in which we are able to hear sounds. We know that you have infrasound we can't hear, and we have also, I mean, super high frequency that we can't hear, that a cat can hear, a dog, and also the vision of the fly, for instance, looking at 180 degrees, but just green and white, I think, or something like that, just two colors. So for them, the sky is not blue. So are we sure that the sky is blue? Are we sure that trees are green? They are green or blue in function of our senses. And then when you think about that, I mean, everything is quite relative. And then for aliens, it's even worse. So we could be, for them, the ugliest species in the universe.
Yes, we could be.
When
that's
you see,
why they don't want to come and visit us.
Maybe because we're too ugly. Yeah.
It might be true. Well, I think that's been so lovely talking to you, Jean-Michel.
Same, likewise.
And I really enjoyed that. Thank you very, very much.
I hope that it will make a good and exciting moment.
It will be absolutely brilliant. Thank you.
That's our show for today. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please rate us on whatever platform you get your podcast from. It helps people like you find us. Today's show was produced by Mike Hansen for Pod People Productions. Associate producer Colette Cooper. Theme music by Mike Hansen and Jamie Allen. Special thanks to Nigel Heath and our narrator, Mike Hansen Sr. If you want to share your stories, we'd love to hear from you. Just email info@podpeopleproductions.co.uk. Subject matter: Alien Nation. Beam me up next time. I'm Joe Wood,
and I believe.